Hi, this is Katrina and Sass, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Zooming in the Lens. This is Katrina, and I'm here with my co-host, Sass. Hey, Sass.
Hi, Katrina. What's happening?
What's happening? What's not happening?
That's actually pretty profound and absolutely true.
And it's been a little while since you and I spoke. So what's been going on since the last time we spoke? How are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good, but this morning, for some strange reason, I woke up in the crappiest mood, Katrina. I was in the crappiest mood, and I still seem to be there. I mean, it's just, I have zero patience right now. Like, the cats are driving me nuts. My mom drove me nuts, poor little thing. You know what I mean? I'm like, God, what the heck is wrong with me? I don't know why I'm such a grump today. It's insane. And the worst part about it all is that yesterday I spent the entire day in the most fantastic space working with divine love, the energy of divine love, and just keeping my mind totally focused on that, because I'm really into that as far as healing right now. That's like a huge big deal for me right now. And I was feeling radiant with joy, absolutely ecstatic. Wake up this morning, sleep way too long. I never sleep till 10 in the morning. Like, I don't know what the hell happened there. And it's like, and I am Grumposaurus Maximus. It's a dinosaur. How are you feeling?
I don't think I could top that. I think that you won the award.
You don't have to top
it. I've been noticing a lot of resistance. That's what I'm noticing resistance. Yeah, it feels like I'm entering into projects and territories that are new for me. And I think I've come to the conclusion that you should probably only do that with like two things at once, and maybe not seven.
Yeah. That's like biting off like an awful, there's an awful lot for you to chew on right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of it, I look at it and I mean, it's a great practice without a doubt. Because I could see the emotions of like feeling vulnerable or feeling out of my element coming in. And I have this dialogue in my head that leads to, you know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You can't do this. You can't do that. And I try to not get pissed off at myself when maybe 2 or 3 hours goes by and I sort of wake up from that, knowing that the practice really allows for those moments. I mean, it really actually thrives on those moments, because that's where, when we catch it, we have a choice. We could either be pissed off at ourselves, which makes it louder and gives us more dialogue, or we could say, it's pretty interesting that that's where my mind is going, and I can find some wisdom really from cultivating the witness at that moment. And it doesn't mean that I'm not going to have those thoughts, but simultaneously while those thoughts are going on, I feel a connection to something maybe even larger than myself or my true self, or end my true self. And that sort of walks me through that even that dialogue is okay. Am I making any sense?
You totally are. And the thing that I find really fascinating about this is how difficult it can be to articulate these ideas in a way that you feel is making sense. I know exactly what you're talking about, and it's exactly what I'm doing on my end and what I've been doing for this consciously with awareness for the past, you know, for a couple of years now, but it's getting more and more intense, and I'm becoming more and more aware as I become more and more awake in the dream, so to speak. I mean, for me, that's the goal, to awaken in the dream. This is the matrix, and I'm beginning, and I emphasize beginning, to wake up. You know, to me, enlightenment means you're awake within this dream. And what you're saying to me, the way I would interpret this, correct me if I'm wrong, is that as you become aware of the voice inside of you that's criticizing you or causing you anxiety and telling you, maybe, you know what, you really don't know what the hell you're fucking doing over here. I'm just saying. I just want you to know you're an asshole. That voice is... you're consciously aware, you suddenly become aware, oh, there it goes again. I can hear it. But at the same time, I now know that I can look at it and giggle at it and go, oh, there you are. I don't think I don't see you, because I can see you. And I know you're full of crap, but thank you very much for trying to protect me, because I know that's what you're doing, because you want me to stop doing this so I don't in any way jeopardize my ego in public.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And that's what I'm saying when I sass, I'm saying to you, Kat, I'm saying I'm going to take that voice and I'm going to say to it, it doesn't matter what you say or think right now, God bless you, but I'm handing this over to the universe or God. I like the word God right now. That's I'm on a God kick, word of God kick. It's like we were talking earlier. I wanted to ask you about this. What do you think about the words I am? Like, how that those words, to my understanding, I am is the name of God. So when you invoke the name of God in whatever you're thinking or doing or however, what are you actually doing? If you say I am feeling like crap, what am I doing? Do you see what I'm saying? Like, what am I doing there?
Well, clarify for me, what do you mean? What are you doing?
In other words, am I casting a really gnarly spell on myself? I mean, I think I'm becoming aware, more and more aware, that when I say the words I am, no matter what I follow those words with, that is what I have now decreed, and that is what is now going to manifest. I think it would probably take a repetition, like a lot of repetitive saying, I feel like crap, I am feeling like crap, I am feeling like, I am crap, I am poor, I am not doing well, I am fat. That's my personal favorite. I love that one. I am fat. No, I'm not. Anyways, yeah. So when you continually and repetitively use the name of God followed by something negative, that you're inevitably going to see that negativity showing up in your life in some way, one way or another. It is extraordinary to me as I'm moving through the levels the expansion of my personal awareness. It is incredible to me how the outside world seems to reflect what's going on within me, even though sometimes it's at levels that I am so not aware of.
Right.
We were talking about that whole Ho'oponopono stuff the other day. Do you remember?
Right. I do, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so why don't you say something about that?
Yeah, the Ho'oponopono stuff.
Yeah, that was cool. I really enjoyed that.
It's so fascinating. I don't know if anybody listening is familiar with. I don't even know what you would call it. It's a method, a practice. It's an ancient Hawaiian practice of balance and clearing. They call it cleaning the negativity and the darkness, cleaning it out, accepting it and cleaning it, and therefore transcending it. Because like the whole thing is based on, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you, I love you. It's those four lines. That's how they, that's the practice. And it's funny because I can see you holding a book. Mm-hmm. And what's, tell me about that book.
Yeah, well, it made me think of Ramana Maharshi's Who Am I? The smallest book known to man.
Oh my goodness.
That's the funny part.
Yeah.
Who am I? And it's like a couple pages.
And here we are blathering it on.
Right. Well, he says, when asked, who am I? The gross body, which is composed of the seven humors. I am not the five cognitive sense organs, the senses of hearing, touch, sight, taste, and smell, which apprehend their respective objects, sound, touch, color, taste, and odor. I am not the five cognitive sense organs, the organs of speech, locomotion, grasping, excretion, and procreation, which have as their respective functions speaking, moving, grasping, excreting, and enjoying. I am not the five vital airs. He goes on and on to talk about what we are not. And then the next question, if I am none of those, then who am I? Because you're asking about the word I. After negating all of the above mentioned as not this, not this, that awareness which alone remains, that I am. And then this other question was, well, what is the nature of awareness? The nature of awareness is existence, consciousness, bliss.
Uh-huh.
I really recommend grabbing this book, Who Am I? The Teachings of Sri Ramana Maharshi. What I really dig about this guy is that he doesn't align himself with any one particular method. In some schools, they would say he is a method, but he investigates what is the I inquiry. What is I inquiry? And I like to think of it as, who is it that is asking the questions to yourself? So, for instance, when I'm having that self-dialogue, if I am practicing less, that self-dialogue holds a lot more weight with me because I believe that it's me dialoguing. They're my own answers dialoguing. When I can apply the teachings and I can get in there and I usually respond to myself with the dialogue, you know, with many things, but one thing in particular of who's asking. Well, what do you mean, who's asking? Are you these thoughts, or are these thoughts a collection of learned behavior? Can you see perfection, the desire to be perfect? Can you see the desire for nothing to change? I mean, that's a big thing. You know, a lot of this dialogue for me is, even though I conceptually know that life is ever changing, anything external is forever changing, it's the beauty and the hell of being human. But I know conceptually that everything is always changing, yet I still, when those thoughts are there, have to grab on to, how could my, even though I know it, how could my mind still produce these thoughts? Even if I don't believe them, they still get produced.
What is that?
I believe it's what somebody would look at as the negative parts of this amazing computer of our brain. Like, it's the mind is incredible, and it's cultivating your now, if you're running just through your mind, from a collection of things that happened in the past. And so it's running tape. Mm-hmm. And I could be that tape, or I could watch the movie of the tape playing. And I think that's a good way maybe to describe what the witness feels like. It feels like you're mm-hmm. viewing tape rather than
being.
You are the tape. Yeah, being the tape. Exactly. So in public, sometimes, instead of saying, when somebody says, how are you? And I say, instead of saying, I am stressed out, or I am pissed off, or mm-hmm. I say, I've been noticing a lot of stress, or a lot of trying to get everything perfect. And, you know, that's a practice within itself, is to just be more mindful about what we're saying. But with that, I think it's really important, especially for me, a lesson for myself is that, you know, it's not always going to happen. And we've had a lot of years filling up this hard drive with dialogue. So when you fail, that's what the brain would say, you know, mm-hmm. when you fail, then you get this really unique opportunity to then forgive yourself and just begin again. So there's always a chance. You're never screwed. You're never like, I can't believe this. I can't believe I'm not doing this. I should know this.
So redemption is eternally possible every single moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's like the resurrection. You know?
I think it's really, it's hopeful, you know, and a lot of things about these practices, I think to some people don't feel hopeful when they tell you to go into the suffering and face the demons. And I think more people would rather think positively, and I think it gives them hope for something better. But I guess then again, you know, goes back to that age-old question, what are you going for? What is the objective individually for each of us? Is, you know, we were shoved right away into our family wanting us happy, our parents just wanting us happy, or hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm doing this thing and this thing and this thing and blah, blah, blah. Well, are you happy? And like, that's this like benchmark for, yeah. But, you know, I was really happy doing drugs too. Like, there were moments in that where that was pretty happy.
Yeah, well, I don't think that's wrong. I just don't. You know, that would be a very unpopular view of things, but I don't see why that is any less. I don't think God created itself in this manner to not experience certain things. You know, it didn't go, oh, I'm going to have that, and ooh, I don't want that. You know, I don't believe that. I think it's all experience. I think that's what the one is. You know, I mean, not to simplify things like this, because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Honestly, this is just how I'm currently seeing the world. Because
yeah,
as you know, that shit changes every 10 seconds.
That's
you know,
right.
As you expand into greater awareness, you get more information, what have you. But I think the whole point of this playground, it's like a school, and it's an opportunity to experience everything.
Right.
actually physically experience. That's what the Matrix is. It is the most glorious opportunity to physically to feel and experience your creations. Where do your creations come from? They come from your mind, from your thoughts, from your ideas. And you actually get to physically touch, feel, smell, breathe all these creations, which I don't think we get to do necessarily in other dimensions. I think that's what's so magical about this particular opportunity of a lifetime on Earth in a body spacesuit of this nature. I mean, who knows what there is in the, you know, I don't know, but that's what we're dealing with right now. But it, and we get to play these amazing mind games with ourselves where we forget what we are and we forget what we can do. We forget everything. We forget what the hell we came from, except for those among us who seem to come in to remind us every now and then, the Buddhas and the Jesus Christs and the, you know, Maharishis and all those types of beings who seem to be already enlightened, already awake within the dream.
Right. Right.
You know, that stuff is, it's never ending. Does it not seem like we complicate things so terribly much? Just when we're trying to explain what seems like the simplest of concepts, but all the verbiage and the nonsense and the trying to articulate exactly what you mean makes it sound so freaking complicated. When all I meant was, I am.
Right. Right.
And if I am, you are. Sorry.
I feel the same way about the dialogue where it's very ethereal, you know, when people try to explain these concepts and they're abstract, and I have a harder time relating to them, but I see how hard it is to do any sort of pinpointing is at the same time. But I think language is important.
God, it's the word.
It's important. It's definitely important. I mean, just words like, how much weight does the word happiness carry?
Oh, yeah. Or the word marriage.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Words have vibrations built into them from the repetitive use by beings such as all of us as humans. You know, when you use a word over and over and over, it becomes imbued with an energy. There's an energy in it. When I sang the national anthem in New York right after 9/11 in 2002, when we were doing Janus, you and I had to sing the national anthem at Madison Square Garden for a hockey game. I could barely get through that damn thing. And I'll tell you what, it's not even that time. It's every single time I sing that anthem. And I'm like, what in God's... I feel like I'm going to start crying because it has such an... It's making me cry even talking about it right now. Like, that's how crazy it is. The energy that is contained within that melody and those words... It's like hundreds of years or however long it's been around of people singing it really with intense emotion and meaning it. Because, of course, you know, the United States of America is such a patriotic country. So is Canada in its own way, although, you know what I mean? It's just younger. Mm. But so it doesn't have the same intensity and weight that the States has yet. It'll get there. But that's what I'm saying. It's like it is... And these are just words, but it's the way they're put together, and it's the way they've been repeated over and over and over. It's like the Lord's Prayer. I'm just thinking of like examples that I can think of that are, you know, people can relate to and understand. But as a singer, I can feel the energy of that coming through when I'm singing it. Isn't
that
wild?
Do you think that the words themselves are the power, or do you think it's the memories and the conditioning that give power to the words?
I think it's the memory and the conditioning that give power to the words, but the sounds themselves carry these frequencies and these vibrations. And if you look at the Bible, not that I'm a huge, I don't know much about the Bible. I've been exposed to it over the years, but I'm not like theologian in any respect of the word. But, you know, when they're speaking of the walls came tumbling down, they were blowing the trumpets and the walls at Jericho came down. Now, right? You know that story?
Mm-hmm.
And it's because they hit a certain frequency, which dissolved whatever it was that was holding those walls together. You can see it. You know, remember that old commercial on television where Ella Fitzgerald hits a note and they go, is it live or is it Memorex? And the glass breaks.
Yeah,
poof,
yeah.
And is it live or is it Memorex? But the glass breaks because she hits a certain frequency, right? And it's the same thing. If the wind's blowing the right way and the bridge was not constructed properly, it hits a frequency or a tone and the bridge falls apart. This is all sound. This entire universe that we are living in is created through sound. It's sound frequency that's holding the whole gosh darn thing together. So therefore, words make sounds, and it's the intent and the repetitive use of those sounds for certain meanings that imbue these words with such power. I don't think it's, I think if it was a brand new word like papucci, I just made that up. I don't think that would hold as much.
Papucci. That's good.
That's, I was referring to my stomach.
So papucci means.
Holds no weight.
Or does.
Or it does if I'm referring to my stomach.
Right.
You know, sorry. But do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. I totally see. I understand where you're coming from. And I think the original thing you said is, what is the I am when I'm feeling like shit? And I go out repeating to people,
I am feeling like shit. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it's so interesting that you have those belief systems of how much power it carries, but yet we continually do it. And it's to me that it has to become funny.
It does. So, but my question to you, Katrina, with all this is, how do you have any practical suggestions or practices, methods that you would use specifically when you become aware that you've just done that again? You said, I am a piece of shit. And then you go, oof, I just did it again. Okay, how do you redeem yourself in the moment of becoming aware? What practice would you use to sort of like to cancel out what you've just said? Like, what would you use?
Well, I don't try to cancel out what I just said, because what I just said is part of my existence, my human, you know, relationship at the moment. Mm-hmm. What I do is a few things. And it depends. I don't have any one go-to. Sometimes I'll just drop down and close my eyes, because I'm a very visual person. So when my eyes are open, there's a whole other dialogue that goes on internally than when my eyes are closed. So sometimes I close my eyes and I do my mala beads, which are just my reminders. And they're a great mantra for focus, mind protecting. And I'll just go with each bead, not because I feel like these beads. Yeah. So Sass is showing me her malas. It's not because I think the beads have power. It's because at that moment, what these beads mean to me is that they are a reminder that I am not my thoughts. So much like what you're saying in regards to the power of words, even spiritual practices, models, and tools, they're still a place that you're sitting. And I use the places that I'm sitting that are the least trapping for me. And the mala is one of them. And I think when if you pay attention to when you're having all that dialogue, it's anything but focused. It's so unfocused because you could say, I really suck. I'm really fat. And oh my God, now I got to go to work. Oh my God, I forgot. I got to get blah, blah, blah present. And then, oh, blah, 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 blah. It's never really this organized set of let's have a hash out of how much I suck. It's that with your to-do list. So I think focus helps in that moment. So I may do that. And then the next thing I know, it's not that I'm canceling out what was said. I'm just realigning and grounding myself to what I truly feel is real for me in that moment, grounding or, and at other times I ask myself, who said that? I know I could, you know, sound like a crazy person, but who said that? And it reminds me to remember the works of people like Ramana Maharshi, where inquiring into the self isn't so that you inquire to judge. I think we're all doing so much of that already. I think the self-inquiry is to discover that none of this can be, you can't help yourself when you're doing it from the same thing that created it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like if you're going to have a mind dialogue, it's going to feel to the mind dialogue. It's going to feel like that vicious circle of just one voice talking to the other voice. And, you know, to be honest, I think that's a little helpful, too, because it's a process. And so, yeah, OK, if the mind is saying to the mind, who said that? Well, I said that. And you go around in circles. Guess what? You're distracted from the dialogue for a second there.
Yeah.
And then you find tools that work for you. Everybody's different. But like you singing the national anthem, that meant something in that moment because you were tapping into what this represents to mm-hmm. people.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have to find what represents practices that are where we're currently at.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know, you know, for me, I sometimes, what holds weight with me are beings that have come before us. So somebody like the guru, Neem Karoli Baba, I imagine, and I don't even know if I'm imagining it, honestly, sometimes it just feels like it's real, that he's laughing at me and pointing, but in with all the love, you know? Like with all the love in the world, he's just going, had enough, Katrina? Had enough? And that kind of jolts me out to understand that it's about developing the witness, because the witness will have compassion for that dialogue. The mind will just create more dialogue saying, you shouldn't be there. Why shouldn't you be there? I don't care if you've been practicing 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. Mm-hmm. I think we all have to give up the model that what we think yoga or spirituality looks like, because it doesn't look like anything that I thought growing up. It doesn't look like that somebody is going to walk around and not have self-dialogue. I really think that we have to change our perception of what that actually is.
It all goes back to that standard of perfection that we seem to have swallowed hook, line, and sinker, doesn't it?
Yes.
It's like, you know, it's like you're saying, what does that look like? Well, there's this perfect being.
Right.
Who never has any thoughts of this nature because they're constantly living in a state of light and law. Which is, you know, everything is always freaking fantastic and happiness is always yours. And right. It's just like, That's not how it works. This is happiness. All of this is happiness. Define happiness. You know, if we define it by the standards of our culture, that mm-hmm. it's fleeting anyway. It could mm-hmm. never stay the same. You'd get bored. You'd mm-hmm. be bored of being happy.
It's not, which, happiness is not a destination.
No.
It's a method of travel.
Thank you. And it's a choice. I know that's, oh God, I did not enjoy hearing that before. What do you mean happiness is a choice, you bastard? No, it isn't. It's the result of certain external circumstances lining up the way I want them.
Well, I find happiness to be limiting, too.
Well, it's totally not true. You know.
Well, it's just limiting. It makes me feel like... If we're going for happiness, then we're creating an expectation that happiness should always be present.
Mm.
And it totally unprepares us for when happiness is gone, because then we start that perpetual motion of trying to get back to happiness. And mm-hmm. that becomes this huge indicator as to our success, quote unquote, in life. Are you happy? And I think in order to embrace happiness, you have to also embrace sadness. And, you know, that's what doesn't fly in a lot of people's minds of a practicing, you know, person in any modality at all, because what's the goal then if you're not trying to get happy? But it's not only not about trying to get happy. It's not about trying. It's about embracing exactly where you're at right now. And if right now, Sass, where you're at is a raving bitch, if you could see the perfection even in that, and then develop the, talk to your witness, develop the state of yourself as a witness, you can be like Maharaji and laugh and point with love at the ability that you have to notice where you're at any given moment. It's acceptance and being with what's real and what's present. And you know what? I love this one line in the Tao Te Ching. When people see some things as beautiful, other things become ugly.
Yeah.
When people see some things as good, other things become bad. Mm-hmm. Being and non-being create each other. Difficult and easy support each other. Long and short define each other. High and low depend on each other. Before and after follow each other.
Mm. Duality.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And life, you know, it isn't about trying to get somewhere as much as we thought it is. Can you find the happiness within a shitty job isn't because the job is meeting all the requirements that you've defined as happiness. That's not spiritual happiness. That's emotional happiness.
Uh-huh.
And emotional happiness is feeding whatever was put into the hard drive as the definition of happiness. Happiness in our culture might be enough money.
Yes, that's so, yes. That's exactly right. Oh my God.
Having a husband or having a wife. But to have spiritual happiness is to be able to play in all the arenas of happiness and to, you know, not that I'm there by any means, but it's a place to look at as a benchmark for when you have that self-dialogue of I am shit and this is going wrong and that's going wrong. And I've had to reflect on that a lot these past few months for my own stuff that I am getting involved in and required to do and all those sorts of dialogues that come with that. Mm-hmm. Of how do I just embrace the present moment instead of constantly informing my now with the definitions that I've given to myself of words like happiness or sadness, because then I'm always trying to get somewhere else. And I really, I'm not trying to have momentary feelings of peace. Drugs gave me that. And then when they wore off, I was no longer looking for drugs. I mean, I was no longer looking, you know, in peace. I was looking for the drugs that were giving me the peace. And happiness feels as limiting to me as that, because then when you're not happy, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The whole point to me, and the more you're talking, the more you're talking, the more this is going through my mind over and over. And it's like the whole point of this to me, the whole point of being alive in this arena, in this matrix, is to experience. It's to experience anything and everything. Mm. That's the point. The point is not to be happy. The point is not to be a guru or an enlightened being. The point is just to experience, and to experience through the senses. This is a sensual matrix. It's all about the senses. You know, and to realize the extraordinary power that is innate within you to mold the apparent reality that you're in. You can mold it by your focus. What you focus on creates your experience. You know, you create your own reality, you create the world, you live, all of that. I mean, most of the time, we're not consciously doing that because we have never been taught that is innately what we are. We are creators. That's what we are, you know, because we are in the we were created in the image of our creator, which is God. So I think that the whole point of this exercise is to experience and to expand in awareness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And the you know, I'm not sure about trusting the senses either, because I think the senses are part of our delivery system that we carry in the body. But I think we should be experiencing things with the senses.
Yeah, and I'm not talking
about
trusting
them. I just don't think we should rely on it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about they're a gift that we have been given to actually to feel and experience our creations in a tactile manner. I don't know what else to call it. You know, we hear it, see it, feel it, taste it, smell it, touch it, all of that stuff.
And I don't think it's a twofold, because I don't think these kinds of dialogues and practices within ourselves, it doesn't have to be this giant task.
Right.
Like, you don't have to go walk into a yoga class right now. You don't have to go find a guru. You don't have to, it's not a lot to do. It's more of finding dialogues, like, I guess, like you and I are trying to have here now, that's available, so that we start asking questions about the questions. And it feels like this, oh, how will I ever be happy at my job that I hate? Or how will I ever rekindle this love that, you know, I want to rekindle? And if that mirror goes up, and we start to do the inquiry inside the self, we could see how these models are being perpetuated by the dialogue that we're speaking to each other, and how we're just recreating the same story over and over again. But even that is okay. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, it is okay. And I hope I'm not sounding esoteric. For all I know, I am. It's hard to put, it's hard to know where to start when you don't know who you're talking to.
Precisely.
And so you and I think we just talk to each other. So, you know, hopefully there's little things to grab on. But I do have one thing that I think helps me when I remember that we are all in the beginner's mind all the time. And to stay connected to that, to that place where you're learning things for the first time and you're curious, and you really just have to be curious. Who are you?
And it seems to change. You know, it never seems to stay the same.
Well, it depends on the who am I? Who is it that you're looking at? Yeah, I mean, if we're looking at, you know, my thing that of the one and the two.
Yeah.
Where the
one. You should
one,
tell me about that, like right now.
Yeah, yeah. The one is
there's two parts of you.
Unchanging, yeah. In this scenario, there's two parts of me. There's many other ways to expand on this.
Yeah.
But for this explanation, the one is your true self, the unchanging you. In Hinduism, they would say the Atman and Brahman and in other God. The important part about the one is that it's unchanging. It's what is always with you and always present, whether you're aware of it or you're not.
Consciousness.
Sure. Consciousness connected. Mm. So the two is who I think I am.
The ego.
It's who I think Katrina is. Katrina's this, Katrina's that, Katrina's this. And it's all the wonderful skills that I have gathered through this world for what works in society and what works and what's accepted and what's not accepted and my takes on things and my likes and dislikes. And my two wants to stand somewhere, even if it's I hate mayonnaise and I love ketchup. It just wants to sit somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that is ever changing, like you just said. Mm. That's the ever changing part of us. I think I lost my train of thought.
It was so good. Great. The one, so you're saying that there's two levels of your awareness that in this particular scenario, for the purpose of this explanation, Katrina or Sass or whoever's listening, there's two parts of awareness to us. There's the part of us that we call the one, and that is the non-changing, it's the force, Luke. And then there's the two, which is also known in Freudian and Jungian type philosophies as being the ego or the id, which is the creation of a personality, who I am, where I come from. I had these parents, I've done this, I've learned that. It's a two-part model. The one is what I really am and what we all am. And the two is the part of us that wants to stand up and be recognized and be admired or liked or any of those things. So when Katrina's talking to me, she'll often go, "Well, Sass, this is Katrina one talking right now." And I know what she means. And now you guys do too.
And she'll say, "Don't forget to take your medicine, Katrina." Right.
Both of us are basically talking from Sass 2 and Katrina 2 right here, just so we get that straight.
Well, that's actually cool that you said that, because I think that my point in bringing that up was to see that they run simultaneously. Yes. It's not one or the other, really. It's a simultaneous thing. And then when you start to develop that sort of fluid back and forth awareness where you're noticing this is saying this and this is feeling this, other channels open up, other perceptions become available, so there's many running at the same time. And I think from that place, if we can imagine that all I'm saying is, if we think of something that you feel unattached to, but that you just feel love for, it usually happens in, you know, with an animal or, I don't know. For me, it's definitely for my cat because although I see attachment is present, I do really feel unconditional love for the soul that's in there. And I try to create the least amount of damage with my anthropomorphic ways of raising her, or as if I'm raising her, she's raising me. But
No, I get it.
And I watch the dialogue from that place, knowing that it's not that I need to sit somewhere and that one's right and one's wrong. It just becomes interesting what my incarnation is feeding to me when I sit in my one. And I do whatever practices or things that make me feel grounded. So like I said, if you imagine something that makes you feel grounded, if you could get to that place in like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever it is, then you can sit and witness as the mind is trying to tell you to get up. This sucks. I can't quiet my mind. This is woo-woo. Whatever it is that the dialogue is that it's in your mind. So I'm saying it's all acceptable. Nobody's needs to be a different way in order to practice. It's acceptable for you to just show up as you are. And I think the other takeaway after the one and the two is I love Ram Dass's example of the three different kinds of happinesses, of happiness.
Yeah.
He talks about that there's pleasure happiness and there's joy, and that something like addiction is always leaving you wanting more. And that is the same feeling we have in lots of other things in our life. It's not just for addiction, but it's to satisfy a pleasure. And it always leaves you wanting more. So it's a momentary feeling of happiness. And then he talks about happiness is emotional, and emotions come and go. It may play into the complex of our other emotional stuff that we all carry, but there is also spiritual happiness, which gets very close to joy, and joy being part of the one. Mm-hmm. And I like the explanation of understanding that there's emotional happiness, which usually comes in attachments. And then there's pleasure happiness, which usually comes maybe even in sex or
food,
in new relationships, right? But then there's spiritual happiness, which is, if I was going to have to aim for happiness at all, that would be the happiness that I would aim for, because it's not dependent on the comings and goings of pleasure happiness and emotional happiness, where attachment is and where we never feel good enough and where we're always trying to get it back. I need to get that happiness back. Spiritual happiness is running underneath you like a river, while all the other happinesses may or may not be there, but you constantly have that in your one.
Yeah.
And it helps us not take everything so personally.
Oh, God.
And find humor in it, you know?
It's because the other happinesses are dependent on circumstances.
Right.
Right? External circumstances, right. Where spiritual happiness is dependent on nothing but awareness.
And it sounds so easy, right?
Doesn't
no.
it? What a load of shit.
Who are these girls?
What a load of shit. Bull poop.
Well, you know, I have to say, of course, we don't have any idea. We're not claiming to know, but these teachings have really affected me.
Me too.
And my life, and definitely you, Sass. And, you know, I hope that this just inspires people to get curious as to next time you're happy, is that a fleeting happiness? And what is the happiness based on? Like, mm-hmm. I got called the other day to do something for somebody that made me feel, God, I can't even remember what it was now, but something that made me feel, ooh, I'm glad I got that call. And I immediately saw that it was this emotional happiness of attachment to what I thought in the past would create happiness for me.
Right.
But I didn't deny it. I didn't say, don't you go there. And, you know, you need to stop feeling that happiness. I just softly noticed it.
What it was.
And and understood it. Yeah. And I say that if we could just get curious about all the things that get you excited and the things that piss you off, like what you're going through right now, Sass, just feeling this emotional shift. Is it now your shift, or is it just a shift that is happening?
Yeah.
Exactly. It's a shift that's happening.
Yeah. Yes, and
don't be pissed at yourself when you might align to that shift and define yourself as that shift.
No, actually, I kind of think it's starting to become funny. That's which is my favorite place to be. You know, eventually everything always ends up being funny. I mean, think about all the horrific experiences you've had in your life, and in the retelling of the stories to others, it becomes hysterically funny because you're like, can you believe this crap? Can you believe this crap happened? And it just becomes ridiculous. It's just funny. You know, I mean, not the greatest comedians talk about the most inane, ordinary, everyday things that, and like usually little things that aggravate us and irritate us and get under our skin, and then they just laugh at it. It's just like they're, like you're saying, Neem Karoli Baba, pointing at you, giggling, going, "Have you had enough yet?"
Yeah,
because it's all fleeting, and I think really at this particular juncture in my particular experience in life, it's the acceptance of things the way they are, and to stop attaching such great importance to each passing fleeting emotion or fancy or thought or idea. Nothing really matters.
You know, I think, you know, doesn't. And then again, it does, right? Like, it matters and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I don't find this work making me feel like, well, screw it, man. I'm just going to it all right now.
No, I don't mean that at all. I mean, nothing is the end of the world except for the end of the world. And if it's the end of the world, then that's that. So that's that. You know, who cares? Yeah. You know, it's my feeling on death and dying as well, which, by the way, that would be a lovely subject for a podcast one of these days.
I don't even think the world has enough tape for me to talk about one of my favorite subjects like that. Like, I would have to get maybe a couple more hard drives if you let me loose.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I'm up for that. We can do a two-parter, because I think that's an extremely important subject and one that is highly underserved at this point in our in our particular culture, you know.
And I'm surprised that, like, the students that I work with that are in their teens and their early 20s, they get it. Like, they get it, man. I would have thought, I mean, at least for me when I was younger, who would want to talk about death and dying? It seems so far away from me. But there's definitely some sort of shift, because I find that the belief system I walk in with, like, these, they're not going to want to hear this, or this person's not going to want to hear this. It's for maybe people that are closer to it, but that is just not true, man. There is really interesting things that can serve your life now as a teenager and in your 20s, with not maybe knowing what you want to do, or maybe knowing what you want to do, but how to make that happen, that the death and dying and aging topics can really serve.
Wow. Let's do that next.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have to wrap it up, but
put a bow on it.
Wrap it up, put a bow on it. I want to recommend the booklet.
Yes.
I'll put the let on the end of it, of Who Am I by Sri Ramana Maharshi. I'm sure you could find it on Amazon.com and the Tao Te Ching, which is spelled T-A-O.
Tao, yeah.
C-H-I-N-G. And the translation I have, which I really dig, is by Stephen Mitchell. And those two things there, obviously checking out ramdas.org for the happiness information that I had just given you of trying to, you know, find our way through even the wishes of people that love us to be happy. Because that may be confining to you.
Indeed.
Or it may be great for you.
Indeed.
But just getting inquisitive. And definitely check out the very new launched Zooming in the Lens course, which is on functionalyogaonline.com. And so until next time, Sassy Pants.
I had a great time. I love you.
I love you too.
Talk
See you
soon.
Later. Bye.
Bye.
Is what do you desire? What makes you itch? What sort of a situation would you like? Let's suppose, I do this often in vocational guidance of students. They come to me and say, well, we're getting out of college and we haven't the faintest idea what we want to do. So I always ask the question, what would you like to do if money were no object? How would you really enjoy spending your life? Well, it's so amazing. As a result of our kind of educational system, crowds of students say, well, we'd like to be painters, we'd like to be poets, we'd like to be writers, but as everybody knows, you can't earn any money that way. Or another person says, well, I'd like to live an out-of-doors life and ride horses. I say, do you want to teach in a riding school? Let's go through with it. What do you want to do? When we finally got down to something which the individual says he really wants to do, I will say to him, you do that. And forget the money. Because if you say that getting the money is the most important thing, you will spend your life completely wasting your time. You'll be doing things you don't like doing in order to go on living, that is to go on doing things you don't like doing, which is stupid. Better to have a short life that is full of what you like doing than a long life spent in a miserable way. And after all, if you do really like what you're doing, it doesn't matter what it is, you can eventually turn it, you could eventually become a master of it. The only way to become a master of something, to be really with it. And then you'll be able to get a good fee for whatever it is. So don't worry too much. Somebody's interested in everything. And anything you can be interested in, you'll find others who are. But it's absolutely stupid to spend your time doing things you don't like in order to go on spending things you don't like, doing things you don't like, and to teach your children to follow in the same track. See, what we're doing is we're bringing up children and educating them to live the same sort of lives we're living, in order that they may justify themselves and find satisfaction in life by bringing up their children, to bring up their children to do the same thing, so it's all wretch and no vomit. It never gets there.
Music and editing, special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.